Occasionally in the scriptures we see some side-by-side comparisons between people. Although these side-by-side comparisons are relatively rare, there are a lot of contrasting characters in the Bible. Sometimes they're not put side-by-side, and sometimes the differences between them are implied. I want you to think for a moment about some of the different women that are presented in the scriptures. Think about them as being totally opposite in their character, kind of women that they are. I'm thinking, for example, about Ruth versus Delilah. Which one do you want in your house? Which one do you want as your daughter-in-law? Which one do you want as your daughter or your wife? Think about the difference between Abigail and Jezebel. Think about the difference between Esther versus Mrs. Potiphar. Think about the difference between Mary Magdalene versus Salome. The difference between Priscilla and Bernice. All of these are very different women. In the case of some, these women were about as ungodly and wicked as a person could be. Some of these women are worse than some of the men in the Bible, and that's saying something. And then some of the other women that I've mentioned, the other half of my list, consists of women who are full of virtue. They are admirable in their character. They are worthy of imitation, sometimes even by the men in the Bible. And what you have in the scriptures then are these comparisons of two different types of women. I mentioned that sometimes these side-by-side comparisons are relatively rare. I want us to look tonight at a passage, Proverbs chapter 9. We're going to conclude our study of the first nine chapters of the book of Proverbs by looking at this contrast. And this is one of those cases where two women are set exactly side-by-side. Two women. One of them we've been introduced to already, and the other one is kind of the embodiment of some other women. In the first nine chapters of Proverbs, we've seen a number of references to wisdom as a woman. She is personified in a few places. Earlier in the book, she actually speaks. In a few places, she's spoken of in the third person, but frequently, wisdom is referred to as a she. So wisdom is the embodiment of a beautiful, ideal kind of woman. And then we've seen a number of references prior to chapter 9 about immoral women. And they occupy a great amount of space in the first eight chapters of the book of Proverbs. And some very unflattering things are said about these women. When you get to chapter 9, though, there's two women. One of them is introduced in the first six verses of the chapter, Lady Wisdom. And the other woman is Lady Folly. Now, Lady Folly is not quite the same as the immoral women that we have been introduced to. But in many ways, she embodies the qualities of these other women. And in this final chapter of the introduction to Proverbs, I think this is an important section because what it does, it brings the reader to a point where the reader needs to make up his mind which path he wants to take. The reader needs to make up his mind which woman he wants in his life. Does he want a woman like Lady Wisdom, who is the embodiment of everything good? Or does the reader want a woman like Woman Folly, Lady Folly, who is a disaster? One of my favorite cartoons of all time was anything involving the Tasmanian Devil. Remember the Tasmanian Devil as he would appear on the screen? There's just this cloud of debris and disaster following him. That's Lady Folly. Everywhere she goes, everything she touches turns to disaster. And he says, which one do you want? So it is a call to decision. It is a summons to decide which of these two ladies you want in your life. Oh, there you go. There's my list of women that I read. There's the title. And there. Two kinds of ladies. Now, there is a paragraph stuck between them, or a stanza stuck between them. There's Lady Wisdom in verses 1 through 6, Lady Folly verses 13 through 18. And when we get there, verses 7 through 12, are sort of a piece of advice. It almost doesn't belong there. I think it serves a purpose, but we'll talk about that when we get there. Let's talk first about Lady Wisdom. Let's read the first six verses. It says that wisdom has built her house. She has hewn her seven pillars. She has slaughtered her beasts. She has mixed her wine. She has also set her table. She has sent out her young women to call from the highest places in the town. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. To him who lacks sense, she says, come eat of my bread and drink of the wine I have mixed. Leave your simple ways and live and walk in the way of insight. So that is this invitation to come to the feast prepared by Lady Wisdom. First of all, it describes her house. Wisdom has built her house. She has hewn her seven pillars. First of all, you normally think about men building houses, especially in biblical times. That's man's work. Well, this is quite a woman here. She builds her own house. And not only that, it is a big and elaborate structure because it is made from seven pillars. Seven is an ideal number, a number of perfection. And the picture here is of a perfect house. It lacks nothing. And the fact that it has seven pillars, it's big enough to accommodate seven pillars, suggests that it is a large house. The fact that these are hewn pillars, they're either cut from rock or they are hand cut from perhaps cedar, like the buildings of Solomon. So these are elaborate, opulent structures. When you read this description, you're immediately to think of a palace. You're immediately to think of some royal residence. You're immediately to think about something that took wealth and skill and ability in order to build. This is the kind of woman that invites you into her home. This is a great occasion of hospitality. So Wisdom has built this house, and she's going to use it for hospitable purposes. Then it talks about the feast that she is preparing in verse 2. Three items. She has slaughtered her beasts, she has mixed her wine, and she has also set her table. First of all, slaughtering beasts. Now, I want you to know it's plural. So this is not like everyone gets one deli slice of meat. This is several animals have been slaughtered for this. Meat in ancient times, especially in Old Testament times, was relatively rare in most people's diets. Generally speaking, it was expensive, and so a lot of people couldn't afford it. Not only is she having meat, she's having meat from a whole lot of animals. She has slaughtered her beasts. So this is going to be an elaborate, expensive affair. This is the kind of feast most of us don't go to on a regular basis. And then it says she has mixed her wine. Oh, by the way, she has slaughtered her beasts. Normally, we think of men slaughtering the animal. This lady can build a house. She can kill an animal. This lady can do about anything she wants to. So here is an impressive woman. But she mixes her wine, and generally that refers to adding honey or spices or some other ingredients to the wine to enhance the flavor. And then she has set her table. So she has this table, all of the bowls and the fixtures and the food are there. She has gone to an elaborate extent in order to make this preparation for her guests. At the time the meal occurs, she sends out her messengers. She has sent out her young women to call from the highest places in the town. Again, women doing what is normally men's work. This woman and her house is full of women. They are all capable, but she sends out these young women to call from the highest places in town. I'm going to talk about that phrase a little bit later on. Some think it just means atop the city wall or maybe from one of the towers in the city. Others think it may actually be a place like a temple. In ancient cities, often the highest place in town was occupied by a temple. If that's the case, obviously, since Wisdom has been connected with God back in chapter 8, this would be the temple of God, the temple of Yahweh, the temple of the Lord. So it's possible that she's calling from that place. The invitation in verse 4 says, "Whoever is simple, let him turn in here to him who lacks sense." Now, we've seen that kind of phrase before back in chapter 7 and verse 7. Both of those words are used. "I have seen among the simple, I have perceived among the youth, a young man lacking sense." It's used again in chapter 8, verse 5. "O simple ones, learn prudence. O fools, learn sense." And so here she is appealing primarily to those who are naive, those who need wisdom. She recognizes that they need wisdom, and so what she does, she specifically invites them. She says, "Come in here if you need this." And then specifically, she invites them in verse 5. Here's the offering that she makes. "Come and eat of my bread and drink of the wine that I have mixed." Now, earlier it said she had meat, she had mixed wine at the table, and now it adds the item of bread. She's inviting them to a sumptuous, elaborate feast. And that feast, of course, is wisdom itself. And so she elaborates in verse 6, "Leave your simple ways and live, and walk in the way of insight." So using the metaphor of an elaborate banquet, Lady Wisdom, the lady of the city, the woman who is at the top of the social ladder, The one who is the wealthiest woman in town offers this elaborate, wonderful feast, goes out into the streets and tells the simpletons, the naive, says, you need to come in here, eat your fill of it. And I notice particularly verse 6, you will live and you'll walk in the way of insight. She offers life and she offers wisdom to anyone who will come to this feast. So that's the offering of Lady Wisdom. Quite a feast. And it must be an honor to be invited to something like that. Now, smack dab in the middle of the chapter, you've got verses 7 through 12. You could take this out and put the invitation of Lady Folly at the end of the chapter, and it would be perfectly balanced. I'm not sure why this winds up here. I have an idea of how it functions. I think offers a little bit of an explanation. What does it mean to be invited to this feast? Obviously, you don't just eat food and suddenly get smarter, not in any physical kind of way. And I think part of the purpose of these verses, verses 7 through 12, is to give us an elaboration of what it means. And secondly, it also gives some insight, I think, into the kind of person that would accept either invitation. Who is going to be attracted to the feast of Lady Wisdom? Who, on the other hand, would be attracted to the feast of Lady Folly? And then finally, it reminds us that this kind of wisdom and insight that is offered by Lady Wisdom is not just an impulsive one-time decision. This is the cultivation of one's character. This is not just, I went to one feast, I suddenly got smart. This is the result of a lifetime of choices. So I do think this section on advice to the wise, to the wise about wisdom itself, helps explain what is going on here. So first of all, there is a section that regards the scoffers in verses 7 and the first part of verse 8. Whoever corrects a scoffer gets himself abuse, and he who reproves a wicked man incurs injury. In the first part of verse 8, do not reprove a scoffer or he will hate you. Now, when wisdom or folly, the one, invites you to a particular kind of feast, what it is, it's dealing with correction. It's dealing with instruction. It's dealing with the learning process. So this invitation to a feast is not just come and eat food. It is come and learn the ways of godly living. So that's really what is involved here. And there's a healthy dose of this idea of reproof and correction. There's two descriptions of the kind of person here. There is the scoffer. A scoffer is someone who just, someone who doesn't have time for anything or anybody, someone who always takes the negative viewpoint, someone who is always doubting what anybody else says. That's the scoffer. And then he goes on to describe that person in the second part of verse 7 as a wicked man. This is not just a skeptic. This is a skeptic who has been hardened to the point of unrighteousness. He has a character deficit. It's not just that he's a little bit dull. Here's a person who is positively wicked. Now, if you try to correct this person, what's the result? He says, number one, he gets abused, probably thinking here of verbal abuse. Have you ever tried to help someone and got a tongue lashing in response? You try to help someone, try to give someone advice, and they just lash out at you. They put you down. They say the most sarcastic and mean things to you in reply. And Solomon warns that when you try to help the scoffer, that's what you'll get. And sometimes it may get even worse. It may involve injury. He who reproves a wicked man incurs injury. And finally, he says in the first part of verse 8, when you try to reprove or correct a scoffer, he will even hate you for it. You're trying to help, and all you get from them is flack and resistance. So Solomon says, be warned that there are different responses to this invitation of Lady Wisdom. You would think that anyone who is invited to the feast described in verses 1 through 6 would gladly accept it. And if you're probably talking about food, you might be right. But if you're talking about wisdom and the pursuit of learning, and the correction and the discipline that it takes, there are some people that are not interested in learning. And that's the scoffer that he describes. Now, on the other hand, there are wise men who will accept this invitation. There are people who are interested in learning the ways of wisdom, the ways of righteousness. He describes them in the second part of verse 8 and verse 9, reprove a wise man and he will love you. give instruction to a wise man, and he will still be wiser, or be wiser still, and teach a righteous man, and he will increase in learning. Now, back in verse 7 and 8, when he describes the scoffer, he talks about correction and reproof. Here, he talks about reproof, instruction, teaching, and learning. So he's still talking about the learning and the discipline of learning, the idea that we acquire wisdom and knowledge, we put it to use. He's still talking about the same process, but now he's talking about the wise man. How does the wise man respond when you correct him? Well, it says here, in contrast with the scoffer who hates you, he says in the second part of verse 8, the wise man will love you. What happens when you instruct the wise man? He becomes even wiser, the first part of verse 9. What happens when you teach a man who is righteous? And this shows that this wisdom is wisdom in the ways of righteousness. This is a godly man with godly wisdom, living a godly lifestyle. He says, if you teach this righteous man, he will increase in learning. One of them is like a sponge, and the other one is like a rock. You pour water on a rock, it just runs off. You pour water on a sponge, it soaks it up. He says, be careful about who you offer this invitation to. I think verses 7 and 8 and 9, they remind me a little bit of what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 7. He said, do not cast your pearls before swine. Do not cast what is holy before dogs. There's a price tag to giving something holy or good or righteous to someone who doesn't care. They're not going to handle it well, and they may even destroy it in the process. In verse 10, he reminds us that all of this learning is ultimately oriented toward God. He says in here in verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. We've seen that at least three times in the first nine chapters. Chapter 1, verse 7 is identical to the first part of verse 10. It's the theme of the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 1, verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So the kind of wisdom and learning and reproof and correction and discipline that Solomon is talking about is not just, it is practical, but it's not just practical business-type knowledge. This is knowledge. This is wisdom and knowledge in the ways of righteousness. It's connected with the fear of God. If you don't fear God, you'll be the scoffer. If you do fear God, you can become the wise man. So how does this relate? So he says this relates directly then to your relationship to God and your reverence toward Him, your desire to learn. The knowledge of the Holy One is insight. It's not just knowing about God, it is knowing God. Knowledge of the Holy One, to come to know God through the wisdom He imparts in Scripture, that gives us these insights. Because we see things from God's perspective, and it gives us this wisdom that we so badly need. And then finally, there is this warning about the effects. For by me, now this shifts back to the language of wisdom, for by me, by wisdom, your days will be multiplied and years will be added to your life. At a practical level, there is longevity that comes with wisdom. Obviously, there are no guarantees in the Bible about how long you'll live, but when you look at a book like Proverbs and maybe a book like Ecclesiastes and a few other places in the Scriptures, the wise person lives a prudent life. And another way of saying that is the wise person doesn't take stupid, foolish risks. The wise person isn't going to gamble with their life or their property or the lives of others. The wise person lives a conservative kind of life, and that tends toward longevity. So there is that offer in verse 11, that effect. And then verse 12, it places it squarely on the shoulders of the reader. Which way will you choose? He says in verse 12, if you are wise, you are wise for yourself. If you scoff, you alone will bear it. There's a consequence to your choice. And so this poem about Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly isn't just an amusing set of contrasts, it is that. And it's an instructive set of contrasts, but the whole point of chapter 9, really the first nine chapters, is driving the reader to a point of decision. Which one will you choose? Choose wisely, because there are grave consequences to your choice. There are eternal consequences to your choice. So right in the middle of these two poems, you have this advice to the wise about wisdom. And it's a reminder of how you deal with people. It's also a reminder of the kind of people who are willing to listen to wisdom and those who aren't, and the consequences of their choice. Now, this gets us then to the final stanza in the chapter. So here in chapter 9, we get now to the second woman in the chapter, Lady Folly. The woman Folly is loud. She is seductive and knows nothing. She sits at the door of her house and she takes a seat on the highest places of the town, calling to those who pass by, who are going straight on their way, "Whoever is simple, let him turn in here." And to him who lacks sense, she says, "Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant, but he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol." So now he turns to Lady Folly. And it's interesting, if you put her side by side with Lady Wisdom in the first six verses, there's some really interesting contrasts that emerge. First, it talks about her character. It says that she is loud and she is boisterous. She is tumultuous. That word was used back in chapter 7, verse 11, in describing the adulterous woman who seduces the naive young man. Chapter 7, verse 11, "This woman is loud and wayward. Her feet do not stay at home." In the book of Psalms, the word is used sometimes to describe tumult and just uncertainty about things. Psalm 42. Psalm 42, verse 11. "Why are you cast down, O my soul, and why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God, for I shall again praise him, my salvation and my God." That word turmoil in verse 11 is this same word, loudness, tumult, turmoil, unsettledness in life. This woman is unsettled. She is loud, and the explanation that's given to us here in Proverbs chapter 9, well, it's not very complimentary. It just says she knows nothing. She's loud, she is seductive, she is ignorant, and that explains her behavior. Now, it goes on to describe her house in verse 14. She sits at the door of her house. She takes a seat on the highest places of the town. Right away, you see some differences. Her house isn't described. Remember the beautiful description of the house of Lady Wisdom in verse 1? It is a custom-built house. It's a big house. It's an elaborate house. This house isn't even worth describing. She just sits at the door of her house. And furthermore, the idea of her sitting suggests laziness. Now, we've already seen the elaborate work ethic of Lady Wisdom back in the first six verses. She works hard at what she does. She works hard at building her house. She works hard at preparing her feast. She works hard at sending out invitations and inviting people in. This woman is so lazy, she just sits at the front door and shouts at people as they pass by. And it does say, though, that like the woman, Lady Wisdom, it does say that in verse 14 that she takes a seat on the highest places of the town, which is almost the same language that was used back in verse 3 of Lady Wisdom. As I said, if this is a reference to the high place in town where there was a temple, with Lady Wisdom, that is obviously the temple of God, the temple of Yahweh. This may actually be a reference to the many high places in the Old Testament that were dedicated to Canaanite gods, pagan gods. And if that's the case, this may be kind of a not-so-subtle slam against the idolatry that was so pervasive around Israel and sometimes within Israel. Avoid these high places. One high place takes you to the throne of God. The other high place takes you to the throne of idols. And if that's the intended contrast, that may be what he's talking about here. Her invitation is seen in verse 15 and 16. She calls to those who pass by, who are going straight on their way. We've seen this language already in the first eight chapters, frequent references to being on the way, being on the path. She's calling to people who pass by. Every day as you're walking the path of life, and I think this is the point, when you're walking on the path of life, you have these options to go the wise way or the foolish way. Which one will you choose? There's nothing special about about the people that she's calling to. In fact, it's the same group because she says in verse 16, "Whoever is simple, let him turn in here." That's exactly the same thing that was said by Lady Wisdom and her messengers. So they're appealing to the same group of people, but they're offering very, very different things. She calls to those who pass by, who are going straight on their way, Whoever is simple, let him turn in here, and to him who lacks sense, this is what she says. And then here is what she offers instead. Stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Now this is her feast. It's the difference between getting your lunch at the Peabody at Chez Philippe or getting your lunch at the convenience store. And in fact, the convenience store version that she's describing here isn't even her own. It's something that she stole. It's like somebody left their lunch on the counter and she went and took it. Doesn't even know what she gets. Remember what Lady Wisdom offered? She had meats. She had mixed wine. She had bread. This is not even wine. Stolen water. Doesn't even offer you water out of her tap. She goes and steals somebody else's water. And not only that, but bread eaten in secret. That suggests that the bread itself is stolen. She is so lazy, she doesn't even prepare a feast. She just goes and steals something and offers you that as the feast that she brings. So the contrast could not be greater. Two different women, two different kinds of houses, and two different kinds of feast. Which one would you accept the invitation to? I know which one I'd go to. It'd be the first one. That's a feast worth going to. I'd even get dressed up for that. And the second one is just crumbs from somebody else's table. Now, I do think there may be some sexual overtones to verse 17 about stolen water and the bread eaten in secret. If you go back to chapter 5, back in chapter 5, there is that contrast, that title slide that I had with a man looking at two different women. That was when we studied chapter 5, where there is a direct contrast between two different women. There is the ungodly woman that is described in the first half of chapter 5. And then, by contrast, Solomon says, you need to be loyal to your wife. And look at verse 15. Drink water from your own cistern, flowing from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets? And then here, stolen water is sweet. So here's a woman who is perfectly fine with you sleeping around, a woman who's perfectly fine with somebody stealing somebody else's mate. She thinks that's especially sweet, and as we've seen elsewhere in the first 9 chapters, it is destructive, it is death, and that's reinforced then by verse 18, but he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol. Lady Wisdom offered life if you will come and eat with her. Lady Folly offers death and Sheol. The contrast could not be greater. The differences could not be greater. And so these two poems stand side by side. These two women stand side by side in chapter 9. As we get ready to go into the body of the book of Proverbs. Now, the book of Proverbs, starting in chapter 10 and going through chapter 31, there's roughly about 600 Proverbs there in that section. And this is what we normally think of with Proverbs. We think about these one-verse statements of wisdom. Do this or don't do that. If you do this, here's the consequences. If you do that, here's the consequences. And I think what chapter 9 is doing for us is, when you start reading these wise sayings, I'll tell you who's going to listen to them. It's not the scoffer, it's the humble. It's not the fool, it's the wise person. It's not the person who's interested in taking shortcuts. It's the person who is disciplined and willing to work. So it gives us a choice, and it gives us a choice as we go through the portal of chapter 9 on into the body of the book of Proverbs, but it also spells out the consequences. Think hard about these choices that you make. I want to talk a little bit about some of the implications of these two ladies and their invitations. Number one, you must choose. And you only have two choices. You must choose. It's not optional about how you live. You will choose one or the other. You must choose how you live your life. And as Proverbs has already spelled out 4 times in these first 9 chapters, this is related to your relationship to God. If you love God, if you fear God, then choose Lady Wisdom. If you don't care, you will by default choose the other method. And so there's this second implication. You must choose well. Again, there are only two choices. I think a lot of people think that there's always a third way. There's always got to be a win-win situation where I can get my way, you can get your way, I can be committed to what I want to. They have a buffet view of their faith and religion. I'll take a little bit of this, take a little bit of that, and if I want to dabble with this and dabble with that, I'll do that too. No, choose well, because there's only two options. There have always been one of two options. You also have to choose. You do choose. You are choosing every day. Another big lie that people buy into is that somewhere down the road, I will choose. Somewhere down the road, when I get older, when I get secure in my job, when I get secure in my family, then I'll get around to this religion stuff. I'll get around to establishing a relationship with God. No. You're choosing right now. You do choose. Every day of your life, you choose. Every day of your life that you put off a decision about obeying Jesus as Lord, you made a choice. You made a choice. And every day that you make a conscious decision to do the will of God, you made a choice. Every day of your life, you do choose which path you're on. You do choose which invitation you want. You do choose which woman shall be yours. And then finally, you're choosing a destiny in all of this. Again, the contrast in their destinies could not be greater. Verse 6, Lady Wisdom says, "Leave your simple ways. Come to my feast. Follow my path. Leave your simple ways and live and walk in the way of insight." But Lady Folly, in the last verse of the chapter, says, "The fool does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of Sheol." So choose well. Choose wisely, because your eternal destiny is at stake. Critics often... One of the things that Bible critics often say about the Bible is that it has a very unflattering portrait of women. Now, one of the things that I think that overlooks is the Bible was written, both Old Testament and New Testament, in a highly patriarchal culture. So, yeah, there is a male bias, if you will, in Scripture. Every culture in the ancient Near East, every ancient Greco-Roman culture that we know about was highly patriarchal. And the Bible... in some ways reflects that. It transcends it, but it does reflect it. But I think that this poem here at the beginning of the chapter, and particularly this contrast, I think this is one of the greatest compliments to women ever. Think about how we normally portray wise people, or the phrase wise men. You know, how many times have you seen on TV or have you seen in movies, the quest for wisdom involves climbing some distant, remote mountain, and when you get to the top, who's there? Some grizzled old man who's got a beard that goes down to his toes, and he sits there by himself, and if you're lucky enough to climb that mountain, you can go talk to Mr. Wisdom himself. That is not how wisdom is portrayed in the book of Proverbs. Wisdom is portrayed as a beautiful woman, a desirable woman, a talented woman, a hardworking woman, a hospitable woman. You don't have to climb some remote mountain to get to her. You walk down the path of life and she's there saying, "Come on in." And not only that, but her invitation is to anyone on the path, and she's especially concerned about the naive. What more could you want? What a beautiful woman. What a woman. That's the kind of woman you want. And I think that's one of the biggest compliments that the Bible could pay to women. The embodiment of wisdom is this fabulous woman. And in fact, it says of the other kind of woman, you don't want anything to do with her. That's not unflattering, that's reality. You don't want to dabble in foolishness. You don't want to dabble in immorality. It will bring you down. It will destroy you. So this wonderful woman says, "Come to the feast. I've got a feast for you. If you're willing to humble yourself, if you're willing to listen, if you're willing to learn, if you're willing to do what I say, you will eat, you will be filled, and you will live. Or you can choose the paltry feast of stolen water and stolen bread and eat it in a dark corner and find death. Which one do you want?" And so as we end this study of the first nine chapters of Proverbs, It's a challenge to choose. It's an offering of two ways, two women, two feasts, two outcomes. Which one will you do? I hope that you've been impressed with this study of Proverbs, that wisdom is there. It's there for the taking. Now, it's a learning process. It requires discipline on our part. We have to have enough discipline to pursue it and stay on that path. But wisdom is available to anybody. Now, it takes some study on our part, some learning. Are you willing to read a book like Proverbs? Are you willing to think about these Proverbs and what they say about your condition, about your choices, your relationships, your behavior, and all of that, how you think? If you've got the discipline to do that, then you'll learn. And in your learning and in your fear of God, you'll become more like God. You'll become more like the wise person who is described here. It all depends on which one you want. If you want that wisdom, as Solomon says here, come to this feast. Think about that while we stand and sing.
Who at my door is standing?